Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Well, the WNBA playoffs are about to begin after a tremendously successful regular season. And who would have ever thought that you'd lead off a September sports media podcast with the WNBA, but that is the Caitlin Clark effect. We will, of course, talk about the NFL, but this is a WNBA-heavy edition of the podcast this week. Welcome to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Drew Lerner. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So, like I said, it's a WNBA-heavy edition of the SMW podcast this week. We have a special guest, Debbie Antonelli, the Basketball Hall of Famer, and an analyst who, if you watch basketball at any level, you've probably heard her do a game, and she is an analyst for the Indiana Fever. So she will be here to talk about Caitlin Clark. And we also have an appearance by Brian Lawler of Scripps to discuss Ion's success with the WNBA this season as well. But before we get into any of that, let us talk about how the National Football League did in week two. A tremendous number for CBS, nearly 28 million viewers, and it kind of puts into sharp relief how disappointing last week's number was for Fox. Week one, unopposed and under 24 million. Week two, CBS benefiting, of course, from the, well, the Caitlin Clarks of football. Well, the Caitlin Clark of football, I guess, is Taylor Swift, right? Man, you know, this, I just can't believe the impact that cutting away to a celebrity in the stands has on the ratings. I would never in a million years have thought that that would have any impact, but I mean, the Chiefs are going to be a draw no matter what, and I do think that probably helps. And certainly Kansas City with their narrow controversial wins every single week, this time around 27.9 million for the CBS national window. And that's panel only. That's not panel plus first party streaming plus viewers we found on the couch cushions, right? It does include, of course, out of home viewing, but, you know, it's a great number. Certainly for a long time, the NFC was where it's at, and CBS was, you know, not doing as well with the AFC. I think Kansas City going for three straight titles, they have changed that calculation. Drew, I'll bring you in.
Yeah. Well, the stars are in the AFC, John. Look at the quarterbacks. We got Patrick Mahomes, Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers is in the AFC. You know, the list goes on, right? And yeah, I do think this number was helped a bit by just how limited the competition was in that afternoon window. There was only three games, and this was by far the best game. So maybe you had some people that would normally maybe watch Red Zone or just watching this game instead. And also it was close down to the wire, and as the highest profile players in the league playing in the game. So, you know, I'm not surprised by the strong number, but you're right. It does kind of illuminate how weak the week one number was for Fox with the Cowboys and God, I can't remember who they played.
Yeah, that's because they're the Browns.
Yeah. Cowboys, Browns, exactly.
It's kind of weird, but like every time the Cowboys play the Browns, and they only play them once every 4 years, it's the week one national game on Fox. Like, this is not the first time I think it's like the second or third time since I've just been doing the site that Fox has opened their season with the Cowboys at the Browns. This is not some kind of great rivalry.
Yeah, I feel like every offseason, it's the Browns and the Jets for me that they put in way too many high-profile national window games, and they never deliver. I guess the Jets, they both won in week two, so, you know, maybe I'm speaking too soon, but those games are never fun. In any case, John, do you have the Fox numbers handy?
Yeah, Fox had 18.8 million for its single header. And they continue to be off to their best start since 2020, with the caveat, obviously, they had a solo doubleheader in week one, whereas last year they had to compete, well, the last 3 years, they had to compete in week one with CBS. But they're still off to their best start in 4 years. Just don't look under the hood.
Yeah, exactly. I guess we'll have to wait until what, like week 10, until the numbers are truly like the average actually can be comparable, because that's when we get that next doubleheader. Or I guess we, at that point in the season, we'd have the same amount of doubleheaders as we did at that point last season.
Well, it'll be interesting because, you know, I don't think it's week 10. I think it's December. So it's like,
It's gotta be like week 13 or something. Week
14. 13, 14, 15, something like that. It might be week 15 because it's the week before Christmas. I think it's week 15.
Oh, okay. Then, yeah.
That's going to be interesting because, you know, week one, there's so much energy and excitement and build up for week one. But you get to week 15, those December Sundays, no one can do anything. You can't go out for a nice walk. It's a nightmare. The sun is down at 4 o'clock. You know, you can get some pretty nice numbers in week 15. So that double header might not be quite as bad, even though it's not week one. There's a lot of viewers to be had once you get to late December.
Well, the other big story this weekend, John, from the NFL was, of course, Tom Brady entering week two. This time, Cowboys Saints, he was calling a different end of a Cowboys route. With the Saints kind of blowing the doors off of that team. But reviews say he was much better this week. John, what was your takeaway?
I watched Red Zone, and obviously the Saints are just beating up the Cowboys, so didn't really get too many clips of that game. You know, Brady, to me, improving is not a surprise. The question is he going to get to the point where he's worthy of that number one slot? And he very well may. He's Tom Brady. He doesn't operate by the normal rules, all right? I mean, he's going to be somebody who very well could go from the kind of very awkward, very stiff presence that he had in the open of, week one, that first impression, to, you know, maybe being totally in command and totally comfortable. But certainly I'm not surprised to see him improving. It's just a question of how much he will.
One more thing before we get on to the interviews, John, I forgot to mention Amazon's Thursday Night Football debut. Opened with a very slight decline from last year, 14.96 million viewers, which was down just 1% from Vikings Eagles last year, which got 15.06 million. Did you see anything different from the Amazon broadcast this season?
Well, you know, I want to say something because, you know, something I've been thinking about lately. Is Al 80 yet? Is Al Michaels 80?
I think he's still 79. Let me see.
Al Michaels is 79. You're right. So, you know, I've been thinking about this lately. I think anybody out there who has elderly people that they know understands that these are not the golden years. They're like the worst years of adverse health, of adverse mental health, of decline in ways that's not comfortable to talk about. And we see it, you know, we saw it with Joe Biden, right? You can go back to 2020, not that long ago, and Joe's a completely different guy, much less 2012 or 2008. We don't talk about these things since it's not comfortable to talk about them. But, you know, the older you get, it's very difficult to maintain your mental health and your physical health and your abilities. Al, given he's 79 years old, is doing unbelievably well. And I know he does not have the same skills that he used to have, but 79 is not some kind of normal age to be working in television. And for him to be at the level of quality that he reaches every week, he's not the best he ever was. But I mean, any of us at 79 years old, even with all the supplements and advances that some of us might experience, you know, because of our current ages, we're not going to be doing what Al's doing, more than likely. It's extremely rare for someone to be able to do the tough job of play-by-play at the level that he's doing it at 79.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And, you know, this team will be calling a playoff game this year, which is important to note. And also important to note, perhaps, is he probably has the best, partner for someone of an advanced age in television in Kirk Herbstreit, who, you know, for several years now has been a great partner to Lee Corso on College Game Day during his, as he continues to age.
And can I sneak in a quick comment? Yeah. Lee Corso, who had a stroke and is 90 years old and is doing national television every week, he's better than any 40-year-old is at doing anything. All right. I mean, Lee is better than Pat McAfee. Pat McAfee's not going to be able to have a stroke and be 90 years old and do what Lee Corso is doing. All right. We need to understand that you can go back to Dick Clark. Dick Clark had a stroke. Do you know Dick Clark?
Yes. Yeah.
And everyone thought he was the youngest guy in television. He was ageless. And then all at once, he aged 60 years because of that stroke. And everyone was like, oh, get this old man off the TV. It's disturbing. And it's like, actually, no, it's incredible that he, after a stroke, an advanced age, he's fighting his way onto this live national holiday event every single year and doing it competently. And yeah, okay, he's slurring his words a little bit, you know, get over it, right? I mean, we need to understand, Hubie Brown is out there performing miracles every single time. And it's just, we need to kind of have a different approach to how we deal, because we underrate the ravages of age.
Yeah. Well, Al Michaels still putting on great performances on Thursday Night Football. I actually tuned into the Prime Analytics alternate broadcast. I forget exactly what it's called. And that was an interesting experience. It gives you the all-22 cam during the plays. And occasionally, I believe his name is Sam Schwartzman. I could have gotten that wrong. Occasionally, you know, someone will cut in and provide some, you know, quip on analytics. You know, as an analytics head myself, as someone who at least is an analytics enjoyer, maybe not someone who can interpret them as well as I should be able to, it was fine, but I thought a lot of it was actually pretty basic stuff. It was mostly like fourth down decisions. It wasn't really, I didn't feel like I was learning more than I would on a normal broadcast, to be quite honest with you. But I do like the idea, and I think there's a lot of room to improve upon it. So, you know, I'm glad that Amazon is experimenting in that way.
The great thing about a streamer like Amazon is you can do all these alternate feeds relatively easily. I mean, I guess you could for ESPN as well and put them on the app. Analytics focused broadcasts, you know, there's so many people who oppose analytics and do so vociferously, like Wilbon or Charles Barkley. But obviously, there's an audience for it. And I think it's a younger audience. And, you know, I just spoke about, you know, needing to respect the elderly. And that's true. But this is still an industry that caters mostly to young people. And if you can find a way to bring them in with some of this analytics focused content, that's the way to go.
All right, John, why don't we go ahead and get to the interviews?
Yeah, well, hey, we are so excited to be able to talk with Debbie Antonelli, the Hall of Fame basketball analyst who covers Indiana Fever games locally. We will also be joined by Brian Lawler of ION, who's going to talk a little bit about his network success with Caitlin Clark in the WNBA this year. Before we get into that, just quickly, what a season it's been for the WNBA. Most watched season ever on ESPN, which has had the league since its inception and had the league on both ESPN and ABC since 2003. And then, of course, ION with its records. I mean, everybody set a record this year. Everybody was up, I believe, triple digits. And obviously, Caitlin Clark, the prime mover for this success. So why don't we go ahead and get started talking with someone who has seen Caitlin play all season long. And this is Debbie Antonelli, the analyst for Fever Games, who, of course, has covered so much women's and men's basketball, professional and college, throughout her career. And so a few people who can give us better insight on the Caitlin Clark effect. Well, we are so happy to be joined today by one of the ubiquitous analysts in basketball at all levels, Debbie Antonelli, who also has been calling Indiana Fever games before Caitlin Clark and, of course, during the Caitlin Clark era as well. Debbie is going to be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame later this year. And you might have heard her, if you don't watch women's basketball, you might have heard her on the NCAA men's tournament the past few years for CBS and Turner as well. So, Debbie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, John and Drew, thanks so much for inviting me to your podcast. I'm excited about our conversation today.
Yeah, well, why don't we dive right in? We are taping on Tuesday, and the Fever have one more game left in the regular season, and then it's off to the WNBA playoffs. Now, you have covered Fever games long before Caitlin Clark ever arrived, and the Fever, of course, do have a record of accomplishment, winning the WNBA Finals in 2012 and making it to Game 5 of the Best of Five Finals in 2009 and 2015. So the Fever, they are no strangers to on-court excellence, but off the court, this has to be beyond anything that we've ever seen for any WNBA team, and certainly for Indiana. Has that been the case?
Oh, no, without question, guys. I mean, it is insane. It is amazing. I call it Clarkonomics. It is a real term. It is defined by attendance, ratings, the no pun intended, the fever around the game. I've been in every WNBA arena this summer. Most of the arenas, or half of them, are full of Fever fans. There's a lot of number 22s running around, and it is just absolutely incredible. This is my 37th year on the air. This is my 19th year covering the Fever directly, and it has been absolutely fun. It is. There's no question this has been a fun summer.
And of course, you know, Indiana on the court, a turnaround, no playoffs since Tamika Catchings retired. And that was a while ago. It's been, what, I guess 8 years. So back in the playoffs this year, it's such a strange playoff format, I think, to a lot of folks who aren't familiar. But road team opens up first two games on the road. And then if they win one of them in a best of three, they host that game three. So no guarantee that Caitlin Clark will play another home game in the playoffs or one. But if they do play a home game, it's going to be either to get to the semifinals or in the semifinals. So what chances do they have against Connecticut, against Minnesota? What do you think?
Well, Indiana has a win over every franchise with the exception of Las Vegas, who swept the team and went 4-0. Las Vegas is bigger, stronger, more veteran at every position on the floor than Indiana, so that's not a good matchup for them. Hopefully they'll be able to avoid Vegas in the playoffs. Connecticut is a team that they do have a win over. Minnesota, they have a win over. No opponent is going to be easy, and playing two games on somebody's home court is definitely challenging. If Indiana can just split with right now what it looks like will be Connecticut, if there's a way that they could get a split there, and I do believe those games will be close, I do believe those games will come down to the last couple of minutes, last couple of possessions, and then, you know, you got to be in position on the road to be able to win those games, and it'll be a challenge regardless, but if they could get home and get to a playoff game here, I have experienced the playoffs here. As you mentioned so well, John, the 09, the 12, the 15, I was here for all of those. I was here for game five of all of those, or on the road for game five. You know, Tamika Catchings in so many ways allowed this franchise to continue to exist, because each year they got to those playoffs, it was at a desperate time of the franchise. And in 2012, we won it, and we won it here at home, and it was absolutely insane. I can only imagine if Indiana could bring a playoff game back now underneath Caitlin and Kelsey and Aaliyah and everyone else on the team, it would just absolutely be ridiculous here around Indy.
Debbie, I want to kind of get at, you know, obviously the catalyst of a lot of this change, which is Caitlin Clark and what it's like to cover her, as she's such a different athlete than probably many of the athletes you've covered in the past for the WNBA. Have you changed your approach at all to covering an athlete of her stature that really kind of transcends the league?
Well, you know what, Drew, that's a great question. And I've only had one other person ask me that. And honestly, I've been in the league since the inception. I did the ABL before the WNBA existed. So I've been around the women's professional game longer, really calling the game, than anyone else. I've been so fortunate in my career to have the incredible luxury of following these players through their college career. If they played international basketball and then came here, I wouldn't have covered them in college. But if they played in college here, I definitely would have had them. So I've had the great pleasure of spanning a lot of incredible talent across the league. I've always said the product's been great. The product has always been good. It's always continued to get better. Now we just have more eyes on it. Covering Caitlin is a little bit different. And I say that only in this aspect on the air. Because it takes Indiana 2 or 3 seconds out of the net to get the ball across midcourt with the ball in Caitlin's hands, I have to be very careful that if I'm going to say something after the other team scores, I better be quick and get out because I don't want to mess up Pat Boylan's step back three, you know, Caitlin from deep. You know, usually my comments about what Caitlin does or how she scores, especially outside the arc, is just like how ridiculous the range is and how quickly she gets it off or how quickly she gets her feet organized on her step back. And the thing is when she goes right, she's driving. Everyone knows it. When she goes left, she's stepping back. Everybody knows it. We've known that since she was a freshman in college, and we still can't find a way to stop it. And it's absolutely amazing and really fun to watch. And it's galvanizing for the rest of the team and the fans across the W, especially those that love the Fever.
It's been one of the kind of the storylines so far this season, the perception that there's been maybe kind of a rude welcome to Caitlin. You know, obviously the flagrant fouls and certainly the rivalry with Chicago and Angel Reese and Kennedy Carter. You've been there, obviously, every step of the way with the WNBA and every step of the way this season. Is that overstated? Is there some truth to it? And is it something that is without precedent? I mean, we all know Candace Parker got into that big fight her rookie year with Detroit.
Yeah, I think that bullying, harassment, and hazing is not welcome in our society in any place. And so it's kind of a code inside sport, right, that this happens. Why it became such a public discussion, I don't know. It is part of, you know, competitiveness. Some of it is sportsmanship. Some of it is unsportsmanlike. I mean, there's a whole combination of things here, but no one ever could have really predicted the attention that this was going to bring. We could have prepared for it. We could have anticipated, but the amount of attention that has come because of what Caitlin has been able to generate and winning and getting the franchise to the playoffs. I mean, it's a combination of all those things. So, you know, yes, everybody has an adjustment. When you go from high school to college, there's an adjustment. It is more physical. It's faster. But you don't hear college players saying to rookies coming into the league or freshmen coming into their conference that you're going to get beat up. You know, in the W, I kind of felt like this is a code amongst players. And I'm not a proponent of bullying. I'm not a proponent of harassment. I'm not a proponent of hazing. And all of that was happening. And for some reason in sport, we seem to accept it. When we made it public, I thought that was wrong. If the players had just kept it to themselves, like you do in college, like you do when you go from high school to college or college to the WNBA. And I'm not Pollyanna. I'm being a Pollyanna about this. I mean, I'm serious. Like, I don't think there's any place in society for bullying. And just leave the code the way it is. It would have been fine if they had just left it. But for some reason, that's what the players chose to pick on Caitlin about. You know, she's had no problem. Quite honestly, 10 turnovers in the first game on May 14th. But when you got to July 17th, the game right before the break, she broke the WNBA assist record with 19. So her learning curve was short and steep. And she's obviously made the adjustments to playing at this level without hesitation, without problem.
And, you know, kind of speaking to that improvement over the course of the season, I did go to our opener, the home opener, and, you know, I think 3 points in the first half, you know, obviously, over the course of these past few months, it's been just incredible to see the progression. How much do you think that Olympic break, a lot of people were upset that she didn't make the Olympic team, but it really seems like that was probably an important amount of time off for her.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, it's been pretty well documented based on the way the team has played. They're 9-4 since the break. They were 8-2 at one point. This is a team that has come together in a lot of ways off the floor. And I say this about Indiana because there's a lot of adjustments that took place, not just Caitlin's. Aaliyah Boston had to adjust to playing facing up in the high post area in the middle third with a short roll, not a long roll, not a deep catch in the post. Aaliyah Boston could score one-on-one on anybody in the post. There's no question. And in the league, with the 3-second defensive call, you don't get a lot of double teams. So at 6'5", she's well skilled on the interior. Her change came in adjusting to the pace that Caitlin was going to play with, and then the short roll facilitating decision making in the middle third between the elbows, and all the things that she's done. If you look at her assist numbers, they are way up, especially since the break. Kelsey Mitchell didn't get a preseason because of an ankle injury. Kelsey's been one of the most durable players in the league, very seldom ever gets hurt because of her stamina, her conditioning, her durability. And she had to adjust coming off the ankle injury and not playing with the ball. That was a big adjustment for her as well. Caitlin is going to dominate the ball. So when you take a look at Caitlin's adjustment, Aaliyah's and Kelsey, and the way Lexi Hall has played since the break and the change to putting her in the starting lineup, there's a lot of things that Christy Sides did really well as this team came together over the break. So it's a combination of not just Caitlin, but it's a combination of all of those factors coming together.
You bring up Christy Sides. It's got to be unprecedented for any WNBA coach to get the kind of scrutiny that she gets on social media. You know, and it's not unprecedented for coaches. Generally, we saw with Steve Kerr in the Olympics, but the attention for the WNBA has been so high. How do you feel like she has handled the spotlight that I don't think she could have anticipated?
I think she's handled it remarkably well. And it's not just Christy. It's every aspect of the game that has more eyes on it. So everyone from broadcasters to those that cover the game, to those that play it, to those that coach it, there is more outside media in terms of what have been, you know, like our little basketball bubble of media and people that have covered our game. Now on the outside, there's so many others coming to our game, paying attention, those that have very high social media platforms, to all the major news networks covering us, and not just sport, news. So that's what we wanted. We wanted that. The players, they wanted better quality of life. They wanted more money. They wanted charter flights. They wanted all these things. The valuation of franchises has significantly increased. Expansion is significantly coming forward. All these things are generated by more attention, more eyeballs, and it's going to mean more money for everyone. So everyone's going to benefit. And yes, we're all under more scrutiny because of it. I think it's going to make us all better. I think it's going to make our game better. It's going to make us that deliver the game better. It's certainly going to make those that coach the game and the decisions that they make around the game better. I've been listening all morning to a breakdown of the Philadelphia Eagles and the Atlanta Falcons last night, and how harsh and how much time is spent on the last couple of minutes of that football game. That's where we are in the W, and I embrace it because this is what we wanted. I'm ready for it, and I want to make sure everybody else is ready for it.
As you mentioned, you know, this has really gone outside of basketball circles, WNBA circles, even sports circles. This is obviously a media-focused podcast. What has been your takeaways from how those people that aren't necessarily in the sporting world have been covering the WNBA this past season?
Well, I think it's been great because it's not just Caitlin. There's been a lot of Asia Wilson. There's a lot of Arike. There's players that maybe might not have crossed the CBS news desk that now are getting attention, that didn't cross the ABC, that aren't on Good Morning America. I mean, I think those are the things that are infiltrating not just the basketball cycle for news, but news in general. And that's what we wanted. Women's sports is hot. There's still not enough investment in the women's game. There's not enough investment in women's sports. But I think all of this coming together at the right time, there's a confluence of many things working together that has allowed the spotlight to be on players like Caitlin and Asia and Angel. And I think for the most part, I mean, I can just speak for Caitlin because I've covered her and I've probably had the fever 25 times this year. She has not misstepped, made a mistake. Her the way she's handled everything and taking the high road in every institution, every instance, doesn't make a mistake. And I don't anticipate she will. She's grounded in team. She's grounded in team first. And that's how she was raised and how she sees the game. And you obviously can tell that by her leading the WNBA in assists.
Something unique about covering the WNBA is that oftentimes they're calling games for both a local and a national audience. Is that something you're cognizant of when you're calling a game, if it's going out to both a local audience and on national television?
You know what, Drew? I have been doing this a long time. I have covered teams that have cut down the nets and those that are in last place in the league or in their conference, men and women, college and the W. I approach the game the same way. It doesn't matter what outlet it's on. I'm approaching the game exactly the same way. Now, when we have an Indiana Fever broadcast, you know, this is the way I look at it. There are four ways you can look at every play: team A, team B, offense, defense. Okay, for me, I skew to the offensive side, right? Because I care about offense. I'm shoot till your arm falls off. I want teams to score. I mean, 110-109 in here the other night, I could not have been happier. It was, I knew neither team played defense. They were the last two place teams on D in Dallas and Indiana. Who cares? That was entertaining and that was fun. And you knew it would come down to the last couple of possessions. I think when we call the Indiana Fever games, yes, when you're playing at home, obviously, you might skew to Kelsey and Caitlin and Aaliyah a little bit more. That's not done intentionally. I think it's just the fever of the way the games go and you're playing home. But, you know, when I have a game that's broadcast on NBA TV and broadcast locally, I don't treat it any differently. And when I have a game on ESPN and I'm not covering the Fever, I don't treat that any differently. I'm still trying to tell the best stories and to strategize at the highest level based on all of my prep. I'm a heavy film watcher and I'm heavy on tendencies, and that's where I go. The player's skill sets are so good. There's no way you should treat it any differently, whether it's a home team or an away team.
I would be remiss if I did not ask you about the Cheryl Swoop situation and kind of the controversy surrounding the perception that she's got a problem with Caitlin. She's a TV analyst, does the Dallas Wings games, and obviously one of the legends of the game as well. Is this a case where social media is just being over the top, or is this kind of more of what Nancy Lieberman has said, that there is something to the criticism of Cheryl?
I think it's what we talked about before. There's more people paying attention. You know, 5 years ago, whatever Cheryl said, if she had said those things, nobody would have really caught on or paid attention. But now there's so many new people, and there has been some divide in our game early on, and some of it has been race-based. There's no question. We've all seen it and we've all felt it. And it's not something or a place that we want our game to ever be in. So, you know, Cheryl, it's so funny you bring Cheryl up, because I'm working on a project where I'm putting together the top moments in college basketball history. And Cheryl's 47 always resonates with me more than anything else that she did, because I was there in 1993 and watched her score 47 points against Ohio State in the title game to win the national championship. I think if Cheryl could take it back, I'm sure she'd take some of it back. I'm sure Nancy wouldn't like to have the tenor between the two of them the same. I know both of them. They're both legends of our game. And I regret that it happened for both of them. But, you know, I think it's going to go away and we're going to move on. It's not something that Caitlin's spending any time on or dwelling on. Certainly, that's where that kid is so resilient at 22 years of age to just take the high road in every instance has been absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Do you think that, I mean, obviously, you know, no disputing, there's been some definitely some stuff on racial grounds. Do you think some of it's just also generational, like we see in the NBA, where Anthony Edwards the other day said players in Michael's time didn't have any skills other than him? And obviously, you know, old people who were there would be a little disrespected. And there's an element of that with some of the fans who are new to the league and they kind of disregard everything that came before.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think education is the number one thing there. You better be educated before you make a statement like that. And I think if you can have an opinion, but you have to get the facts right. His opinion is that's his opinion. That's not substantiated by any facts. There's no education behind that. That's just Anthony, you know, saying what he feels at the moment. That's the part of social media that is interesting, you know, to me, that, you know, players have their own platforms. They can do what they want. They can say what they want. But, you know, every single thing we do in our lives has a choice and a consequence. So, you know, if you make a choice to put something on social media, there's a consequence that comes with it. You know, that's just the way it is. That's what I would teach if I was teaching a social media class. You can put whatever you want out there, but you better be ready to defend it. And you know there could be a consequence that comes with it. Whether it's fact-based is one thing, opinion-based is another. And you guys know everything we do is so subjective, right? It's just subjective what we do. But I can tell you, for me, I mean, I wouldn't be doing this as long as I've been doing it. I wouldn't be sticking around if it wasn't fun and I wasn't enjoying it. And it's amazing to be in the game right now. It's amazing to be watching women's basketball at this point. For somebody like me who's spent a role in every aspect of the game, to be able to watch what we're experiencing is just great for everyone. It is a cliche about rising tides. Everybody's brand is better. Everyone's making money. And you can thank Clarkonomics for it, because she's a big part of it. She's not the only reason. She's not the savior. It's not that. She's the greatest disruptor in the ecosystem our game has ever seen. And we all should be grateful for that.
All right. And before I let you go, you know, this has got to be, you talk about the rising tide. I remember you and Beth Mowins doing playoff deciding games on oxygen. Right?
Oh, my goodness. I was just talking about that the other day. I was just talking about all the Oxygen Network games that Beth and I traveled to WNBA calling. How much fun that was. Those were in the summers where we were doing like 30 WNBA games, and it was fun.
Yeah. Well, but of course, the issue is it's Oxygen. It wasn't most popular network, right? So, but, you know, now, obviously, the spotlight is so much higher. And your particular career is growing, where you did the men's and women's tournament this year. I think you were the first person to do that, obviously heading into the Hall of Fame. How gratifying has it been for you personally to have this experience this year?
You know what, guys? It's emotional for me to think about and reflect back on the incredible time that I've had in the game, the number of people and players that have crossed my path that I've been able to in some way serve the game, and serving the game and calling the game and being prepared and doing my job at the best of my ability with the people on our team, no matter what the broadcast crew was, that we were able to, you know, put together a really good 2 hours of college basketball or WNBA basketball. You know, I'm just overwhelmed by the amount of recognition that I'm receiving now. And I'm grateful for all those incredible play-by-play producers, directors, teammates, all the different networks I've worked for. Working for CBS on the men's tournament, I've done that for 8 years now, and that's a big part of my schedule. Working the NCAA women's tournament is a big part of my schedule, and of course this summer, the WNBA. And then in January, NC State is going to put my banner in the rafters at Reynolds, and I don't even know how I'm going to handle that, to be honest with you, because I love my experience at NC State. It was an incredible launching pad to allow me to do so many things around the game, and to be with my coach Kay Yao and have my banner next to hers in the rafters is really special and meaningful and really beyond any words I could put together today. But I hope I have some on January 16 when that happens, because that's going to be a really special moment. And the other thing I must say is, doing this for 37 years and having a career in the game while raising my three boys with my husband is probably the most underrated achievement of anything, that we've been able to do all of these things and have this incredible career, and then watch my three young men live their lives and be respectful and appreciative and understand the balance between men's and women's sports and to accept it all. It's absolutely incredible. And that's something that should be said every time I get a chance to talk to some guys like you and talk about my career, because that's a really important part of it. And I should mention, all transparency, my youngest son is a walk-on at the University of Louisville. He had a four-year career in Division II, and now he's a walk-on, and he's gaining an invaluable experience there. And Pat Kelsey took him on his staff, and I'm so grateful for Pat and his staff for giving my son a chance, because he wants to be a coach and he loves the game. And for a parent to do what you do and to see your kids love it equally as much as you and want to be involved in it, that's really special.
All right. That's a great note to end things on. Debbie, thank you so much for taking the time. And we will hear you, obviously, as the seasons go along. I know no national, no local TV for the WNBA, but the college season is coming back soon. We'll be listening for you then.
Thanks so much, guys. Great to see you. Thank you for having me on.
Hey, no problem. Thank you.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
So we're very happy to be joined by Brian Lawler of Scripps. And of course, one of the big stories in the WNBA this season has been the tremendous success of Ion, which seven times this season crossed the million viewer mark for a regional window involving Caitlin Clark. Ion, you know, did well last season, perfectly acceptable numbers, but nothing to this level. So tremendous growth. And obviously the Caitlin Clark effect, you know, speaks for itself. But what else have you noticed this season in terms of your WNBA audience? Has it been a rising tide lifting the rest of the league?
Yeah, and thanks for having me, John. Look, Caitlin is an incredible talent, an incredible athlete, and the interest she has, you know, there's very few athletes in the world that have gained the kind of attention that she has in the following. As you mentioned, you know, seven games this season that we had, where it surpassed a million viewers. What's amazing to me is that from 2008 till the beginning of the season, there wasn't a single WNBA game that reached a regular season game that reached a million viewers. And you have over 20 this season, many and probably most with the Indiana Fever, but there's also other games that and other teams that are really gaining a lot of interest and a lot of fandom. And I think we've certainly seen that, you know, last year's senior class coming out of college and the popularity and the interest in the Final Four, you know, really brought more than just Caitlin to the WNBA. You know, Angel Reese, Cameron Brink, Kate Martin, right? And so all of those players sort of spread out through the league and just brought a lot of attention to the new teams that they were on. And interestingly, the rivalries that were created in college continued into the W. And so, you know, you saw, you know, some of the teams I mentioned, whether it was Indiana, Chicago, LA, Las Vegas, you know, Connecticut, right? All with players that, you know, were high profile in last year's senior class that now became rookies in the WNBA, and their interest in those players continued. And so it really was a fascinating, you know, sort of experience to watch the interest of the league. And while we did have, you know, our highest view games were Indiana games, there were several weeks where we had 600,000-700,000 viewers and we didn't have any Indiana game, which told me the entire league is benefiting from this rise in interest in professional women's basketball.
But of course, there is no doubt that the Caitlin effect has been tremendous. And it's kind of changed the perception of the WNBA as a draw. This is year two for Ion, year three next year. And then, you know, from there, we don't really know what's going to happen. Just, you know, not to go into any detail or anything, but obviously, I would imagine you're interested in continuing on with the WNBA beyond this current deal.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, we hope we're partners with the WNBA for a long time. You know, obviously, we'll have to sit down and work out the details of a extension. They did protect the Friday night rights as they, you know, went to the market with their NBA rights. More than half the WNBA was included in that. And so, but they did protect our Friday nights. And look, I think that there's a reason why they did. You know, we were the first ones in to make a commitment to the WNBA before there was any, you know, Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Cameron Brink inside of the league. You know, we identified several years ago that we had a platform being Ion that has national reach. It's in every U.S. TV household, whether you have cable or not. You know, it's an over-the-air broadcast channel. It's on cable. It's on satellite. It's a fast channel, so people who are into streaming can get it. And so, you know, it's the most distributed network there is in the U.S. And, you know, after we purchased Ion during the pandemic and spent some time looking at what we could do with it, we realized that we had a tremendous platform for reach. And that is something that most teams and leagues seek, is to be able to put their games in front of more fans. And once we identified sports as an opportunity for Ion, we spent a lot of time looking at what rights would be available and what. We didn't want to just sort of come into something that was already established. We really felt like we had a platform that could help something grow. And all of our research indicated that there was a growing interest in women's sports, not just basketball, but every time, you know, the college softball, women's volleyball, gymnastics, all of those things were on either ESPN or a broadcast platform. But that was really rare, but there was significant interest in that. And we thought that, you know, if we could move those to an over-the-air broadcast channel, people would quickly realize that women's sports, there's nothing inferior about it. These are fierce competitors, great athletes. It's competitive. It's fun. They just needed more visibility. And so, you know, we brought that opportunity to the WNBA. We offered them the opportunity for a franchise night, which they had never had before, a single night, national doubleheaders, that the entire country could see every week. And we really believe that if you could create a franchise night that was there every week, every Friday night, two games, there would be a level of consistency that could drive loyalty. And so, you know, I think that was really appealing to the WNBA. This season, we added a studio show, you know, first national studio show to support the WNBA. And it gave us an opportunity to, you know, talk more about matchups and, you know, standings and stats, but really was about helping these new fans that were beginning to be exposed to the WNBA to get to know the players and their stories. And, you know, Scripps is a 140-plus-year-old media company that's all about storytelling. And so we created, you know, these long-form segments in there that really told the stories of the players and what they've overcome and who and what they're about. And we think all of that is unique and really been an important part of the growth of the WNBA. The fact that, you know, this year, as this new class came in with so much interest, and especially, you know, if you go to these games, they're packed with young girls. And so the ability for young girls to every Friday night know where they could sit and watch WNBA, maybe their bedtime gets pushed a little bit. And of course, on seven of the eight of the weeks, we had fever games. I think it just, you know, having that platform where every household could find it, and the fact that it was there every week, and whether the Liberty were playing or not, that people could come back and watch, and you know, now you know, seek out the new rivalries and the new players. I think we brought a tremendous platform to the W, and you know, we're finding through our research, our ratings were up more than 100%. So we more than doubled them this year. But also, you know, we're bringing a greater skew of females to the WNBA versus the other networks that are broadcasting. So there's been a great benefit that our platform has been able to attract new viewers to the W. By the way, the W has brought new viewers to ION. You know, our audiences, they're not only more balanced of male, female, they're younger skewing, they're more ethnic. So I think we've, you know, the idea of bringing a new network with a national distribution and platform, and the consistency of every week, adding the studio show, adding the unique stories that we're doing, has really benefited both the league and us. And as a result of that, you know, they protected Friday nights, and we think we played an important part in the visibility of the league. And we expect to play an important part moving forward.
Brian, how much of the battle is just kind of getting people familiar with ION, where they can find it? You know, you mentioned you're on many different distribution platforms. Yeah. You know, it's probably not a channel that too many people were familiar with prior to obtaining these rights for the WNBA and the NWSL. So how have you gone about, like, I guess, making it a more familiar brand for people?
Yeah, I, that's a great question, Drew. And that was something that we knew from the beginning, that you had this network that's viewed as an entertainment network. You know, it's been programmed for decades with, you know, procedurals and blocks of NCIS, Law and Order SVU, Blue Bloods, Hawaii 5-0. And it's incredibly popular. And people, you know, watch for hour after hour. It's the fifth highest rated broadcast network in America, but it had never had sports. And we knew that, you know, people don't look for sports on ION. And, you know, as it's placed on tiers of cable companies, it's not sitting next to ESPN and Fox Sports One, right? It's sitting next to TNT and TBS and some of the other, you know, programming networks. And so we knew that would be the biggest challenge. And so last year, this year, we spent millions of dollars. We had a very robust marketing platform or marketing budget to be able to support the visibility of both the WNBA and the NWSL. We spent a lot of money outside marketing, billboards, you know, TV, radio, direct to consumer ads, partnerships with YouTube TV, Fubo. So we were very intentional about that. But, you know, we'll only take half the credit, because the reality is, at the end of the day, people wanted to watch, you know, Kate Martin, Angel Reese, Caitlin Clark, Cameron Beck, right? They wanted to see these players. And as a result, they looked and they said, Mom, Dad, or, you know, hey, these games are on ION. Do we have ION? And so I think there was a lot of Google searches for, you know, where can I find ION? And to everyone's surprise, it's not a streaming app you got to pay for. It's not a channel that you got to step up to another tier. It's fully distributed on every network, on every platform. You just got to find the channel. And so that's very beneficial. You know, look, one of the challenges we still have, I think, is, you know, we started really working on this year is, you know, getting bars and restaurants where, you know, there's significant sports viewing going on to recognize that they also have ION, but it's not on that sports tier. You know, all these bartenders and managers probably just flip through 20 channels and they can find, you know, every soccer game in the world, every, you know, every ESPN, you know, channel and all, but you're not going to find ION there. And so, you know, we have begun and will be even more aggressively working next year to make sure that we have relationships with big chains so that they understand the importance of, you know, distributing women's sports in their bars along with the men's sports. And they just need to know where it is. I think there's a lot of interest. I was, you know, in another city last weekend in Indiana, I went to the Fever Aces game and then went out and met some friends at a local restaurant, and every TV in the place had our studio show on. And so, you know, it's there. We just have to continue to drive habit.
Just a quick question, you know, to the broader Scripps Sports strategy. This is maybe year three, I think, of your efforts to kind of establish a sports brand. Obviously, the WNBA has been a tremendous success. And a lot of that, like, you know, like we said, is the Caitlin Clark effect and that confluence of circumstances. But ultimately, WNBA rights are, like, for the playoffs, for example, they're locked up until 2030. So even if you're able to hold on to the Friday night package, you're not going to be able to get finals and things like that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of rights that are no longer on the market. And how are you going to be able to, at Scripps, build up your sports properties beyond what you already have? I mean, is it going to be on the local level? Are you going to see more local, like we see in with, I think, I guess it's the Utah Hockey Club, formerly the Coyotes. Are we going to see more of that?
Yeah, look, I expect you'll see more of both, John. You know, WNBA, you know, is sort of rolled up with the new NBA deal. But again, our rights are available, and we expect that we'll be able to have a long-term agreement with the WNBA and continue that on ION. We have, you know, several more years left in our partnership with the NWSL. And so I think, you know, we have more, you know, we consider ourselves a leader in professional women's sports. We have more WNBA games than any other network. We have more NWSL games than any other network. So we have more professional women's sports than any other network. Look, there's other women's sports that are interesting to us. There's other men's sports and rights that are interesting to us. A couple of weeks ago on a Sunday afternoon, we ran the men's and women's finals of the AVP from Manhattan Beach. And so we get pitched every week on different franchises' rights, you know, whether collegiate pro, there's lots of startup leagues. So, you know, I think we're being very selective. We don't plan to turn ION into a cable or into a sports channel. So, you know, we think of it, it's going to be a lot like USA or TNT or TBS, where it has a consistent programming strategy with a genre that's not sports. But then, you know, sports is a really good complement and fit, and people have, you know, are figuring out how to find all those channels. And so I expect that we'll be adding more sports. It'll be very selective and complementary to what we currently have and to the audience that exists on ION. And then on the local side, you know, we do have 61 local TV stations in 40 different markets. And we do think that there's a lot of challenges ahead for the regional sports network business. We've now seen about, you know, 10 plus teams that were part of regional sports networks 3 years ago break away and partner mostly with local broadcasters. We have the broadcast rights to the Vegas Golden Knights, the Florida Panthers, and the Utah Hockey Club. So three NHL teams that will be broadcasting all of their local games, you know, this year. We have the broadcast rights to the Big Sky Conference, basketball, football. It's a big football conference of the FBS out, you know, in like Montana and Utah and Idaho and places like that. And at the end of the day, we're all about, you know, whether it's women's sports, collegiate sports, you know, professional and local markets, we believe that fans deserve to see their games of the teams that they're most passionate about. And that's the beauty of our over-the-air broadcast platform. The Big Sky is on over-the-air broadcast channels. And like in Montana, the interest in Montana, Montana State football is huge. Last weekend was opening weekend. I think we had Montana and Missouri State, something like that. And we had almost a 20 household rating through the state of, let me just get you the exact game that we had there, through the state of Montana. And, you know, the same thing last year, we had the Vegas Golden Knights. 43 of the top 100 shows on television in Vegas last year were live Vegas Golden Knights games. So there's incredible interest in sports, you know, local sports and national sports, but it's all about visibility. Yeah, we had Montana, a 20 household rating for University of Montana football games across the state of Montana last year, last weekend. Highest rating in the market of Missoula, 24 household rating. So a ton of interest in the sports, and our platforms being over-the-air broadcast channels provide the opportunity for any fan in any household to be able to get the games for free.
Brian, you know, I know this is a new strategy for ION, right? You're only 2 years into airing live sports, but has the new focus on women's sports allowed you to, you know, go back to the distributors and, you know, command a better affiliate fee? Is it working in that regard, or is it more so focused on, you know, attracting new advertisers, and that's kind of the benefit to ION?
Yeah, ION's unique, Drew. Our platform, I think, we're able to talk about it being fully distributed in every platform because we actually don't get paid fees from distributors. So because Ion is a configuration of local antennas and licenses in every local market, in a local market, broadcasters have two choices. They can choose to negotiate for retransmission consent, which then they get fees paid for by the cable companies, but they also have to gain clearance from the cable companies. The other option is to select must carry. And so must carry means you're going to choose to not ask for any fee, but they guarantee your clearance. The strategy for Ion for decades has been a must carry strategy where we believed its biggest value was getting national distribution beyond in every TV household, and that would have great appeal to advertisers and brands. And so when we bought Ion, that was the construct. We have not changed that. And we believe that if we did flip it to retrans, we could probably, you know, make some more money. But we would expect that distributors would be pushing back for a channel that they previously got for free. And we'd have some success and some would just say, we're not willing to pay for it. And then maybe we'd only be in 70% of the country. I mean, TBS, TNT, ESPN only reach about 60% of the households in America. Ion, the beauty of the network, the platform is it's in every household. So we have not, you know, made a selection to change our strategy. We're seeing great interest and growth among brands and advertisers who want to be in every household. And so right now we're really focused on being fully distributed and using that, you know, that big national distribution to help, you know, to partner with brands that are helping to drive the increases that we're seeing.
All right. And one more question for you. Over the years, you've seen the growth in the WNBA coverage in terms of the professionalization of it. We've gone from, for example, on CBS, they didn't have their own production. This season, they did. Ion obviously now has a studio show. I know last year you were doing the Scripps News cut-ins at halftime.
Yeah.
So what's the next step? Are you going to start maybe for the national games, sending out a full crew, a full broadcast team? Is that something that might be down the line or what?
Yeah, you know, this year our focus was really on building a studio. We spent, you know, millions of dollars building out a sports exclusive studio in Atlanta. And that launched a couple of weeks ago after the Olympics. And we had been using one of our other, you know, studios there, but we wanted to build one exclusively for sports with a telestrator and all that. And so that's up and running now. Getting a new studio show established, hiring, you know, a host and analyst who really knew the game and were close to the game. And with the W this year, there were several games that we had some of the talent involved in the studio show leave the studio and go out on site. And so they were on the sidelines of the games. They were, you know, conducting pregame, postgame interviews in person. That went really well. I expect we'll do more of that. And I expect that, you know, as we think about a third season and beyond, the idea of, you know, personalizing more of the broadcast from location will definitely be something we'll be looking at.
All right. Hey, Brian, thank you so much for joining us today. A tremendous season for the WNBA on Ion. And of course, the NWSL continues. That season doesn't end until November. But for the WNBA on Ion, we won't see that again until May. And it's been certainly a great season for all the WNBA partners.
Well, thanks. We missed it already. Although we're looking forward to the playoffs and should be a lot of fun. And then there'll be a great draft this year. People like Paige Beckers and others, great new players coming in that are just going to bring more attention, more energy. So we love where the league is at, and we look forward to being a partner with them moving forward.
All right. Hey, thanks again.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Drew.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Well, the WNBA playoffs begin Sunday with four games. This is the first time, at least I believe, since they've gone to the multi-series format that they have, that all four series have been played on the same day. I'm not sure there's ever been another day in WNBA history with four playoff games, believe it or not. ESPN will have three, ABC will have the other one. And it's an NFL Sunday, but in the Caitlin Clark era, that might not be as damaging as it used to be. And we'll see what kind of audience that he's able to bring in opposite the NFL. We can go ahead and start by looking at how her game did this past Sunday against the moribund Dallas Wings on NBA TV. And the NFL did have an impact. One of her least watched games this season, 344,000 viewers. Now, you know, the NBA TV audience for Caitlin had been getting up to 600,000 this and, you know, records every time. 344, it's not bad, but that's an incredible number for a WNBA game on NBA TV opposite the NFL. Frankly, you know, you're not going to get NBA numbers on NBA TV that are at that level opposite the NFL too often. Sometimes you will. I mean, if you certainly if you got the Warriors in it. Definitely an impact. So we'll see what the NFL does. If game one doesn't do well, game two, where Indiana will either be going for the series win or trying to save its season, that's going to be on ESPN in prime time with no football competition. And that could be a nice little number there. Because again, best of three, Indiana will either be trying to save its season or trying to advance. That is going to be a big number. All right, that's enough of this podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll be back with more stuff down the line.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.